Welcome. Good Sunday. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us this week's Take Sanctuary. I have some wonderful spirits with me today. So before I introduce everyone, I'll have them introduce themselves. This week's topic is on the space in between. I don't think I coined the name of it, but to me that means loving yourself through all seasons, all motions, shapes, sizes, versions of yourself, while you're aiming at bettering yourself and working towards progress and progression. So first question is for introduction wise. I'm just going to go in the order I see you all. So if you could tell us your, share your practice, purpose, and or passion. And as an icebreaker question, what color is your heart today? So Brianna, I'm going to start with you.
Right, I get to go first. Hi, my name is Brianna Mathias. I am an executive assistant and project manager for community-based small businesses and non-for-profits. So I guess that's my practice. I'm also very much, I'm like turning into a fairy. I've just moved back from Texas, so I have a garden. And I sit outside and I work all day, and I kind of, I'm also an intuitive diviner. So I take in a lot of messages and try to turn it into art or something beautiful. So I guess that's my passion and my purpose as well.
And what color is your heart today?
I'm gonna say green. I've been sitting out back and kind of looking at all of my my new plants. So I'm gonna say green.
I love it. Love it. Anthony, I got you up next.
I thought you was going to pick me first. I'm like, why'd she say my name first? Man? But nah. I'm Anthony Frazier, CEO of ABF Creative. We're a podcast production company and podcast network. My passion is really just, you know, connected to that, which is, you know, telling stories, you know, and amplifying stories, not just telling them, but, you know, listening to others and finding ways to amplify them for more people to hear them. And so being a storyteller has always been kind of part of my life, even when I didn't know I was doing that. I'm gonna piggyback off of Brianna and say green as well. Green just represents new energy, life, you know, and I feel like that's the color of my heart today.
That's what's needed. Thank you. Mel, I got you up next.
All right. Hey, everyone. My name is Mel. My passion is music. I'm a singer. My practice is also music, but I guess in the daytime, I'm a banker. So that's just kind of what I do, my 9-to-5. I'm a singer. I've always been a singer, just been in different like music programs ever since I was a kid, and graduated from LaGuardia High School, was a vocal major there, and then just went on to college and just did a little like just singing like church gigs, things like that. And now I actually recently put out my first single. And it's very good. So if y'all want to like head on over to my Instagram and give that a listen, that'll be cute. The color of my heart today. Okay. See, I don't want to say green now because everybody said green, but, I'm wearing green, but okay. Let me see. I feel like I'm going to say yellow. And because I feel very light today, I like did like a big clean of everything, and I swept and mopped and everything. So I just feel super like relieved. So I'm gonna say yellow. And I think today's the first day of spring. Am I wrong?
So yes, it's the spring equinox.
Yeah, so that's how I feel. That's my heart.
Thank you. Thank you. Last but not least, Maria.
Hi, everybody. I am Maria I. Melendez. I'm founder and CEO of a wonderful organization called Embrace Her Legacy. And what I do is I really provide transformative social, emotional, personal, and leadership development workshops, programs, and coaching for women and girls worldwide, but really with a specific focus on millennial women and Gen Z. Rondell has participated in our program, so I'm so grateful to be here today. I'm also a podcaster, author, a speaker. They like to call me like your inspirational homegirl in the streets, so that's why I wanted to bring the door knocker energy. So that's what I do, and I think, you know, I'm one of those people who's blessed that I'm living my job, right? My vocation is my purpose. It wasn't always like that. I believe that God has put me on this earth during this time to really be one of his voices, to uplift and transform the lives of women and girls around the world. There is no place that I feel most comfortable than when I'm on a stage and speaking to an audience, whether it's five young women or 500, it's like, I feel very at home there. So I love using my gift of speaking and communicating to empower and uplift others. And my heart, she's a little fashionable today. So she's color blocked. So she has on two colors. Right. So pink is always going to be the color of my heart. Pink is warm. Pink is fuzzy. Pink is girly. Pink is my favorite color. It's just a place I feel like me, like it's always going to, pink is never, like it's always going to be a part of me. And I would say she also feels red, hence the red lipstick. But just because red is passionate, red is fire, we are now in Aries season. Hello. So, you know, if you know one of us, you know we like to fire things up. We are fire signs. So that's how I'm feeling, like pink and red. You know, I got on a pink top and a red skirt. That's how my heart feels.
Amen. Thank you. That's kind of my icebreaker every week. So I've shared my passion, purpose, and practice, but I will share the color of my heart. It's the same color every day. The color of my heart is black. Black is beautiful. That's my cliche answer. Thank you. But I didn't preface this question before. I know how I define that space in our lives of transition, whether it be wanting to find a job that pays more, wanting to change your scenery where you live, whether it's wanting to gain or lose 10 pounds, whether it's wanting to get over a heartbreak and start dating again, start trusting again, building friendships. But what do you all call that space? If you have a name for it, what do you all call that space? Maria, I'll start with you.
With me, mm-hmm. What I'm gonna speak from my experience, right? That's, I called it the wilderness, and boy, because it was like I felt like God had given me a promise, right? And God was like, all right, bet, I need you to do this for me. So I'm like, okay, God, copy. And just to give some context, like my career out of undergrad was the music industry. I worked at a major record label, you know, I was doing my thing. And then I was frustrated for a myriad of reasons that I won't get into. One of them was the lack of woman empowerment. That's how Embrace Her Legacy was birthed. But I knew that God was calling me out of that space into this new space. And oftentimes when we have an inclination and we know God is calling us to do something, we think that it's going to be overnight. And for me, it was not overnight, and it's still happening. And I entered a wilderness where it was just like, okay, I need to strip you of everything that you find comfort in, because I need to show you who and whose you are and why you are, right? And that I got that from somebody who spoke to my girl. So I'll give her credit. Her name is Cordelia. And it was in that time I called it the wilderness, because I was stripped of everything. Everything that I sought identity, meaning, and approval, and I had to be stripped up to realize who I really was under all of that. So that's what I called it. Do I feel like I'm still in that space? No. But in that time of when you want something or you're believing for something or you're on the journey to receive something, what I've learned is that space is so beautiful and we don't acknowledge it as such because you're uncomfortable. But I would not be who I am had I not endured the trials and the tests of the wilderness. Like I didn't feel like that in that. I don't feel like that even in my day to day where things are not where I want them to be. But now looking back in hindsight, I'm like, oh my God, that makes sense. That's why I didn't get that. That's why this was here. Or that's why you took me the longer route as opposed to this way. So now I've just learned to just trust. Like I don't really try to frame it the wilderness, but now just call it that trusting time, that testing time. Like, will I believe? And I've learning. I'm not there yet, but I'm learning to be content and is satisfied in the journey because I can look back and say, oh, I can trust his divine timing, that I'm learning to just trust him in all things. So that's what I would have to say about that.
Yeah, that was amazing. You made some points I'm gonna definitely come back to. It's kind of leading into another question I have. But Mel, same question. Do you have a name for it? Have you ever thought to name it? What do you call that space in between?
So that's interesting because I've definitely been in the space in between. I've never thought to name it. I've just always been like, I feel like I've been the you know, the Mr. Crab meme. Like I feel like if I had to give it like a look or like memeify it in a way, it would be that because that's how I feel when I'm in it. But it's interesting because I feel like I've never thought to name it. I've just always kind of, when someone, I guess, maybe asks me about where I am or how I'm feeling or whatever, I've always said like, oh, I'm like in transition right now. Like I'm transitioning, I'm just in a transitional space. So, you know, that's just always the word that I've used for it. I think that it's interesting because even though it is like Maria was saying, like it's kind of a scary space and we don't ever really like appreciate it for what it is, I feel like that's when I do my best work. And like, that's when I sort of like see what I'm really made of when I'm in that transitional space. It's like, I feel like that's when I see that I need to like maybe push myself a little harder or like see how productive I can be maybe, or just see how discerning I can be. Like maybe I just need to be still and just see what messages I'm getting to then know what my next move is. So yeah, I think that's what I have to say about that space. Like that's when I'm doing my best work. That's when I'm getting my best messages. That's when I'm evolving the most.
I love it. Transitioning, the wilderness. Anthony, same question.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you know, I've read several books about that period, you know, had it in my, definitely experienced it. But, you know, it's so funny, you can read so much about something, but when you go through it, that's when you like, okay, that's when you learn the most. Because I read about it, you know, I was like, I read, you know, Devon Franklin, he coined it development hell. And T.D. Jakes coins it the crushing. You know, he even wrote a whole book on it, right? And that's that period where, you know, you're being, you know, where you're being pressured in multiple directions and being crushed. But that's where, you know, that pressure turns into, you know, promise. It turns into so many, you know, great things. And so for me, you know, I don't really have a personal name for it, but I do know when I'm going through it. And I try my best to appreciate as much as I can, even though it's really hard. I try my best to really appreciate what's going on and trying to find the messages or the lessons within what's going on, you know, and that's usually the hardest part to do, but I do sit down. I think that's where a lot of being still comes from. You know, when you're in that moment, sometimes it's time to stop and really just listen. Listen to God, listen to your intuition, listen to your heart, your mind. Really figure out, what is life trying to teach me right now? Which direction is it really trying to push me? And those are moments, you know, I feel like I am going through that moment right now, personally, you know? And so, yeah, I'm learning to appreciate it, like Maria said, you know, while I'm in it. But at the same time, it's definitely a practice, so.
Yeah, we're going to try and get into those hard moments that you all keep mentioning. Brianne, if same question.
Hey, so I think for me, I'm a very visual person, and for a very long time, that space in the between used to be the sea. And sometimes I would be drowning, other times I'd just kind of be like floating and enjoying the sun. Other times I would be exhausted with like looking for land, looking at like where I'm supposed to be going next. Because I think a lot of the times when we are in transition, if you don't have a very clear view of like what A to B looks like, getting lost in that can feel like it forever. Just a little bit about my more recent journey. I moved to Texas in September, did not plan on it. I actually planned a 1 month trip to St. Thomas because our family's from there. And when it got canceled, something in me like broke, and it was like, I have to get out of here. I was in New York, I lived alone, and not being able to see my friends and like just dealing with how silent, you know, my life had become, it something broke in me, and it was like, okay, I'm gonna move back to Texas. And that just like started this kind of like never ending transformation. I ended up quitting my job a couple of months later, quitting all of my like side hustles and just doing nothing. And the weirdest thing is that was the hardest part for me, is like doing absolutely nothing and just learning myself. So I think for me, what used to be kind of a lost at sea kind of feeling has now transitioned and transformed into really me just being present. Like, I'm always going to be in between. I'm always going to be in between me trying to become the woman that I want to be. I'm always going to be in between, you know, the education that I'm looking for, my level of connection with spirit or with my family or anything else. Like, I'm always going to be striving for better and more, and being able to recognize that in this moment, I am exactly where I'm supposed to be. And it may not be comfortable, as we've said, but knowing that I am always protected and knowing that I am always loved and cared for is what allows me to bring it into present instead of feeling like I am completely lost.
Thank you. I want to, if we can, if any of you can, take yourselves back into those moments just for a second. I know it's the rough patches, but what is it about, or what have you learned about those hard times that for at least a portion or a moment keeps us stuck there? What is it about loss or trauma or grieving that, although it would seem like the best thing to do is to step out of that space, why do some people hold on to it for so long? Why is it so hard to get over that hump?
I'll try to go into this. I think it's letting go of what you thought it should look like. Like, that's hard. You're mourning what you thought something, whatever it looked, you're mourning what you thought the relationship would look like. You're mourning what you thought the journey to success or losing the weight, like whatever it is you're mourning, you have to let go of what you had in mind. And that's hard, right? I think letting go of control, for me personally, it was very difficult for me to let go of the control of the narrative that I thought I had in my life. And God was like, sit down, I'm gonna show you who's God. And And that was probably the most difficult part for me, was letting go and mourning and saying, no, that's not what is for me right now. And then another part is learning to trust. For me, it was hard for me to learn to trust God. I was like, what? And one of the things was learning to trust God in my day to day. Like I mentioned, I'm an Aries, a fire sign. I'm very like, go get it, blah, blah, you're not telling me nothing, don't need a, like, you know, I'm very like, I guess a choleric, you know, some people would say, I don't want to say A-type personality, but you know, I do what I do. And I've always been like that since I was a kid. And for me, God had to show me some things about humility, about trusting him, about vulnerability, and understanding that the beauty and my vulnerability. There was so much that needed to happen in order for me to do what I'm doing now. And I just didn't, I'm out here thinking like I know better than God. Like, God, I need to be with that person. God, I need to have this opportunity. And God is like, you know, that's one thing I thank him for every day. It's his patience with me, because I'm like, you know, I really be out here thinking I know. So that part for me was letting go, and that was very difficult. And then learning to trust God, because prior to having that, I had everything, the money, the status, the, you know, when you work in the music industry, everybody thinks Jay-Z your friend. So everybody out here giving you everything for free. Like, I'm out here getting anything I wanted in this city. I had it. So all of that went. Access, money, relationship, you know, all of that. I was shed of that. And then God was like, okay, now do you trust me to walk you through this? And I didn't. I totally didn't. And so that was hard for me, letting go and learning to trust God.
Thank you. That that word vulnerability, I was trying to form this thought around it, that most people are so worried about being vulnerable, not because they feel it's the wrong thing to do, but we're worried about the people in the spaces that take advantage of us when we're being vulnerable, which is such a strange aspect of this world. But Mel, I think I saw you raise your hand initially.
Yes. What was I going to say? Oh, well, I guess now piggybacking off of what Maria said, I think it's hard. The reason we cling to, I guess, those moments. Well, first of all, it's hard to let go of like what Maria said, what you thought was supposed to happen. And like, sometimes there's, you know, even though like there's like trauma or whatever, sometimes if you're comfortable, if trauma is all you've known, if like that's where you've been at for like whatever portion of your life, and that's what's familiar, it's hard to be like, oh, nah, like I'm not gonna be a part of this no more. Cause it's like, that's all you know. Like, I'm not gonna, I don't know what anything else looks like. So I think that's one side of it. And then it's like, the unknown is scary. Like, the unknown is terrifying. And it's like, at least for me, like, that's, you know, I'm someone that struggles a lot with anxiety, like, and a lot of my anxiety comes from like, I don't know what's going to happen if I go here, because I've never been there before. So like I'm like, I'm restless, like I don't know what to do. And that, like, that's, I guess that relates back to the control thing. It's like, you can't control everything. There's absolutely no way for you to control everything. So sometimes you just have to trust God, trust the universe, you know, whatever you subscribe to, believe in. And just know that, like, you're going to be okay. Like, you've been okay before, and you're going to be okay again. And it's going to be what it needs to be.
Thank you. I saw some head nods. Anybody want to jump in?
I agree. You know, I think the way Maria put it is, I never thought about it that way before, you know, because to me personally, you know, that's something that, you know, being an entrepreneur is the most scariest thing. And, you know, you guys who are out there on your own, you know, trying to make it happen. And like, Melissa was just talking about, you know, you just, that's the great unknown. You know, you just don't know what the next day gonna look like. And, you know, I just, when I thought I got a hold of that, just when I thought it was like, yo, you know, I think I got this entrepreneur thing figured out, not necessarily figured out, but just like I found the groove, you know, God pulled the rug from under my feet again, you know. And, you know, my mother passed away top of last month. And while, you know, to me, that was my safety net, you know, and taking something like that away, you know, and then learning to trust God through that, that's a hard thing to do, you know, personally, you know, but I do feel like everything happens for a reason on some level, you know. But that's something that, you know, when you talk about it, like those things I dream about or I talk about, those things when you say you wanted them that way, like all those things I thought about, she was in those images. You know what I mean? Like she was part of that. And so when that was removed from that future that I kept envisioning, you know, that was a different level of trust me that I had to learn all over again, because that was just something I never experienced. You know, hey, you could lose money, you'll get money back. You know, you can lose a lot of different things, you'll get them back. But you know, losing a person is just a lot different. And so learning to trust God through that kind of, you know, grief is something I'm learning to do with, but you know, I'm persevering.
So sorry for your loss, Anthony. Thank you for sharing that.
No problem. Hopefully somebody takes something from it, but you know, it's definitely something that, you know, I believe everything you said. You know, I think it came from such a raw, good, you know, place, and it helped me see things a little, you know. I was like, I never heard it explained that way before. So thank you for, you know, your wisdom.
I'm a little choked up. Somebody else go. Man, but thanks, Anthony. I've reached out to you in private when you share the news, and yeah, man, much prayers and love. Thank you. All right. So, and I'll open this up to anyone who wants to share. What is hindsight like? I think we shared it, like, you know, having trust in God and. Or after the moment of not having trust in the unknown, what is hindsight like? And what conversation do you have yourself when you learn, like, this was the way things happened, was intentional, it was purposeful, you tried to fight it, those seven stages of grief, of loss and mourning. What is the conversation with yourself when you look in the mirror of hindsight and you look back at the way things played out? And is usually a feeling of gratitude and comfort. What is that conversation with yourself like?
I'll go ahead and go first, just because I actually think that this ties into my answer for the last question. So one thing with hindsight is that you actually get to look at how things played out, but then you also get to kind of look at how you thought about yourself through that. And, you know, were you actually, you know, being self-soothing? Were you being self-loving? What, like, you know, what energy would you have liked to have in those moments where you had no idea what was coming next? And a part of my act of forgiveness, it is, you know, acknowledging any of the shame towards, like, maybe I didn't act in the way that my highest self would be aligned with, or maybe I didn't act in the way that the person who is right here right now would actually react. And I think my process of healing is actually going back and, you know, meditating with that version of myself, meditating with a version of myself that maybe I wasn't very happy with, maybe I didn't treat very nicely, and, you know, giving the loving words, the the sweet energy that I feel like I would have needed. A lot of people are now kind of getting into kind of doing inner child work. I do work on the person who I was last week. I want to connect with every single version of myself, because a part of what happens when we're holding on to this resentment, when we're holding on to this regret, is that we never acknowledged it. We never acknowledged either our guilt in it. We never acknowledged our regrets in it. And when we don't acknowledge those things sit in our bodies, they sit in our minds, they fester, they show up in ways that we don't even know how to connect them personally. So I try my best in my work to really root out the root causes of, you know, maybe me not doing the things that I wanted, or it not showing up the way that I thought it would be. And I try to soothe myself through that, soothe my past self through that. And I think I'm very much into metaphysics. I actually think that whenever I'm doing that, I'm sending positive energy to that me in that time. I don't know if you guys have ever had a really shitty day, or sorry, I don't know if I can curse, a really bad day. And you randomly get a feeling that somebody is, you know, either, I always say it was my grandmama's prayers, but I actually think they're my prayers now that are protecting me, or that are holding me up, or that are pushing me forward, or telling me that it's gonna be okay, because it will get better. I think those are the prayers that I'm doing with whenever I'm going back and forgiving myself. So I don't know if I answered the question correctly. But yeah.
You did, and you birthed another question I have. How do we feel about regrets? And some people say you don't regret anything. What happens, happened. It's in the past. Some people say you learn from your regrets. How do you all feel about regrets?
Oh, I'll take that. I'm queen of, I'm not queen, I'm a princess, because I like to use my words to cultivate what I want to see. But one of my areas of improvement has been giving myself grace and regrets. But to tie in your answer to looking back in hindsight, I live by this scripture: all things work together for good for those who love God and be called according to his purpose. There's another scripture that says all things are working together for his plan, he predestined this. So and there's I love the scripture. The scriptures, and it informs me. I don't know how I'm gonna get through this life without his word. But another scripture that says how you, pretty much in my version, it says pretty much how you feel doesn't trump God's word. God's grace is bigger. So I've learned that I can't trust my feelings first and foremost, because one day I'm oh, it was all good, and the next day I'm beating myself up to get it. So something higher has to trump all of that. And I'm like, all right, God, if you said that all things work together for your good, for my good, and according to your plan, I'm gonna have to surrender to that, you know? And that's where that trust and that faith comes in. Now, coupled with the fact that I've been on this faith journey for quite some time now, and I can look back at my wilderness years and those mistakes that I thought were the death of me, how God turned them around and was but I'm gonna use that, you know, and how he turned the mess into the message, you know, how he turned certain things. I'm like, wow, you really out here being God. So that is so beautiful that I've learned to look back as reference points to say, you know what, he got me through that. He used that. That led to that. So that's how I'm learning to deal with regrets and what comes with regrets, the guilt, you know, the shame, who I like to call your inner saboteur, who out here, you know, telling you all these horrible things about yourself. I like to just refer back to that, to say I am, and have conversations with myself and talk to myself the way I'm gonna talk to my homegirl, you know, because a lot of us out here, we don't talk to ourselves in a loving way. You mess up, it's like, oh, you stupid, nobody liked you, that's why that happened with you in the third grade, remember when Anthony dumped you when you was 13, is because, you know, Y'all know what I'm talking about. Like, the way we talk about ourselves is crazy. So I've learned to talk to myself like I'm my homegirl. Like, nah, and now I'm not gonna let you go there. Like, no, you already know. Like, look what God brought you through. Uh-oh, you in your feelings. Like, what does his word say? Do you believe? Whose report are you gonna believe? Are you gonna believe your feelings who out here changing, you know, with the wind? Or are you gonna believe his word? So for me personally, it goes down to like, all right, God, I'm gonna trust you. You really know how to make masterpieces out of my messes. Like, I be out here doing dumb stuff. I'm like, ah! Like, so, and I say that to say, because oftentimes in my scope of work, and I don't know if any other leaders do this, sometimes people put us on a pedestal and act like we don't make mistakes, and we don't be, or I don't have self-doubt, or I don't struggle with self-forgiveness, I don't struggle with guilt and shame on Maria, especially in the work, because I'm empowering another generation. It's like, oh, you don't ever feel lack of confidence. Maria, you seem like you have it all together. I'm like, don't get it twisted. So I like to be transparent enough to say no. And that's another conversation about holding leaders to, you know, unrealistic standards. But I'm like, no, all of us, it's the common humanity. We're all going to struggle. We're all going to go through things. It's about how you speak to yourself and what are you anchored to. And my anchor is God. So.
Amen. Amen. Mel, how do you feel about regret? What's your ideology?
Regret is so, like, it's so interesting, because, like, I feel like the Instagram answer is to be like, it's a waste of time. I never regret anything. But like, you know, I'm a human being, so there's always moments, you know, when it's 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, and it's just me and myself in bed in my room. And I'm just like the wheel is just going. And I'm just like, oh God, why did I do that? I shouldn't have said that. Oh my God, I can't believe I like didn't match those pants with that shirt, like, or just like whatever. So, you know, regret is something that's real and that's present. But I really try my best not to stay there. And what helps me sort of like pull myself out of like in the thick of it is the old saying. I feel like it's always like, you know, everyone always says it. What's for you is for you. And like, what's for you is not gonna miss you. And that always just like pulls me back. Whenever I'm just like in like, oh my God, I can't believe, or like, why didn't that happen the way it should have or whatever. And it's because what is meant for you, what God has planned for you, and just whatever, however your life is supposed to be, is gonna happen regardless. So all that regretting and all that, like, you know, negative self-talk and all the the beating down that we do on ourselves, is like, when you really think about it, it's kind of a waste of time, because you're just gonna, you know, you're gonna be where you're supposed to be. Like, it's already been determined. So I feel like that's my take on regret. Like, I really try, I forgive myself when I'm there, and I try not to beat myself up when I'm there, but I try not to stay there. So yeah.
Amen. Thank you. I got another question for you, Anthony. Is, whether in your own experiences or friends or family, is self-love, is self-forgiveness, is it something that hits people, like they wake up one day and they got it figured out? Does it come in waves? Do you find it and then lose it and then find it again? Is it an everlasting battle? Like, what's your thought on that?
I think it's different for everybody. I don't think that's a one size fits all, you know, situation. But what I will say is that, you know, it's definitely something that for me personally, it comes in waves. It, you know, like, it gets stronger. It's almost like what you talked about, you know, as everybody was speaking, I just kept thinking about words of affirmation and meditation. You know, to me, you know, affirmations are so powerful. You know, I used to always, my brother used to be up on it. He's like, yo, you should listen to this and make you feel better. And I'm like, is this really working? And then after a while, I'm like, yo, I think it really works, because I don't really feel the way I used to feel. I don't really think of myself in the way I used to think of myself. So I think that's something I have, you know, anybody walk away with, is definitely, you know, practice words of affirmation. But then it's a reason why meditation is so powerful for me, and a reason why I'm going to talk about that in relation to, you know, forgiving yourself and regret, et cetera, and self-love, is because sometimes, you know, you got to build a muscle. You know, sometimes it's just really just, it's easy to move things out the way, or easy to forgive yourself. Once you built up that, you took the first shot close to the hoop, you know, so that way you could take the three-pointer eventually. You just move further and further away from the hoop. So to me, is, you know, self-love is a practice, right? So you start small, and then you can get larger and larger and larger and larger. And that way it could come in bigger ways, you know, once you really need it, you know, at the moments where it hits you the most. It's going to be hard to start practicing self-love and be really successful at it, you know, out of the blue, if you've never really done it before and you need it the most. So like, start small today. And whatever you deem to be self-love, you know, I can't tell you what that is for you. But I think words of affirmation is a good way to start, you know, and I think that's a simple way to start. Praying is a simple way to start. Those are all, meditation is a simple way to start. And I think once you plant those seeds, over time, that muscle will start to grow.
Yeah, I love it. Does anyone want to be really vulnerable and tell us if they struggle with any of those things still, like in this moment, forgiveness, self-love? You could just unmute yourself and let us know.
Mel, I saw you raise your hand, but okay, I'll go first. All the time. I recognize self-love as a minute by minute practice. It is an active relationship with myself. It is an active paying attention to what it is that I'm feeling. It is an active, like, what am I thinking? What am I drinking? What am I eating? All of these things. It is the being the mother of yourself, being the best friend of yourself, being your like romantic partner. Like, all of these things are things that I constantly try to keep in alignment. And the truth of the matter is, though, if you were not raised in a way that was your foundation, if you were not raised in a way, or rather, if you were not self-motivated in a way that made you addicted to the love that you can give to yourself, then you start to becoming addicted to other emotions. One of the biggest things that I realized that I struggle with is I had an addiction to sadness, and an addiction to confusion, and an addiction to being angry. And, you know, when you feel comfortable in these spaces for so long, you know, you're like, my life is shitty, or sorry, I'm gonna keep cursing, but my life sucks. And I keep meeting these horrible people, and I keep, you know, I keep drinking, and I keep doing all of these things that I know aren't aligned with the person that I want to be. But for some reason, I keep coming back to it. It's because I'm comfortable with it. It's because that's the thing that I've known for most of my life. And the reason why I think a lot of the time self-love feels like it's a struggle, or that it's hard, is because we're also shedding an addiction. We're also, like, we are shedding what we are used to. Self-love, I don't believe self-love is hard. I don't believe that waking up and choosing myself in every single moment and choosing the things that make me smile and living the life that I want is hard. That's not hard. That's so freaking amazing. But I'm also struggling with letting go of a lot of things that I kept doing because I was comfortable with like sadness and all of the other kind of like negative things. So I think that's really where the forgiveness comes from, is and the acknowledgement of those things come from. Because if you don't acknowledge it, you're just gonna keep blaming everything else and blaming everybody else and blaming, just you're gonna keep blaming. And I'm gonna end it there.
Yeah, thank you. Mel, you could go next, but I see Malik and I have spoken in the past about people are addicted. People do have addictions to emotional pain and anguish. And it's interesting because it's hard to identify in other people. We're not all walking around with these degrees in mental health and emotional health, but very, very true. Mel, did you remember what you was going to share?
Oh, yeah. First of all, I want to add on to that, like being emotionally addicted or addicted to certain emotions. That's so real. And I like, oh my God, whew, that like really resonated with me because I spent a huge chunk of my life being addicted to anger and being addicted to like resolving things angrily and like violently and just like combat, like just being combative. Like that was my way to resolve problems, whether it be like verbally, physically, you know, like being emotionally abusive. I used to be ashamed to kind of like say it, but now I'm not because it's like a part of my journey. But yeah, that used to be like a go-to sort of like, and like answer for me in the way I problem solved. And it wasn't until I started like alienating people that I love that I had to really kind of have my come to Jesus moment and be like, I can't do this anymore. Like, this is not working. This is not serving me anymore. And that's when I was like, you know, I need to go to therapy and I really need to start doing this inner work. But the question was, sorry.
No, I think you answered it, but it's times or moments where you've struggled with, even if it's the present moment, where you've struggled with self-forgiveness, self-love, yes. Healthy behaviors.
Yes. I was going to tie it back. So I guess that, you know, mentioning that part of my life when I was always like trying to be combative and whatever, that was me struggling with self-love. Like the only reason I acted like that was because I just didn't, there was just such a lack of like self-love and like there was a lack of patience and a lack of like just being kind to myself. So I didn't know what to do because I didn't practice it and I didn't like use that muscle with myself. So all I did was like do that to other people. But it wasn't until I sort of started healing that in myself that, you know, other people would comment like, oh my God, like, girl, that therapy is working because like you're like so much more patient and like, you know, the Melissa from 2 years ago would go from 0 to 100 and now you're like at 40. So yes, I've been there.
Thank you. Maria, you said you're a fire sign, right? So
April 16th, if anybody just wants to send me an early happy, I don't know how to act. For my birthday.
When did you discover, you know, just because you're Aries, you're a fire sign, you can't exhibit these behaviors just because, like most people say, that's the way I am, or that's my sign, or I'm from Brooklyn, or et cetera, et cetera. Like, how does that shift happen? Because I think, like Mel mentioned, we find normalcy and it's mostly romantic relationships. People notice it where they had someone who likes to argue. They had someone who didn't like to communicate. They had someone who just liked to shut down. And that's the easiest sort of relationship we have in our lives to notice it. But it's in professional settings as well. It's with friendships. It's with peers all level. But when did you learn, you know, just because you're a fire sign, you can't turn up all the time?
Oh, that's a loaded question. So I'm Afro-Latina, right? And there is a perception that Latina women, we can be very fiery and feisty. And I grew up, all of that is very true. Me and all my family members, we call it the turnip gene. Like, we can go from 0 to 150. And I grew up in an environment where, so Iyanla Van Zandt, she's, you know, one of my fairy godmothers, She talks about, what did your mother teach you about love, about relationships, about men? She asked that question often. And she asked that because she says, you know, either your mother taught you by what she modeled to you or what she told you. And I grew up in a space where it was modeled to me that if you're hurt, you do everything in your power to hurt that person back with your words, whether you want to throw hands. Couple that with growing up in Brooklyn in the 80s and 90s, and we on the L train, and I'm in a uniform because I go to the gifted and talented school, and I'm small, and everybody want to pick on me. So you grow up in this environment, and you know, anyone grew up in New York, like, you got to be tough. And you got to be on. Add the, you know, the turnip gene that's running in my bloodline. Add the way that my mom modeled to me that, hey, if you feel hurt, you hurt back. It was not modeled to me that you can feel hurt and you can feel whatever it is that you're feeling because of whatever someone has said to you, and you can resist the temptation to hurt back. So as a result of all of that, you know, 21-year-old Maria, she was a little, she needed one of my classes, you know? And I'm not as young as I look, so I know y'all thought I was 21, but so I would say you talked about those relationships. I had a relationship when I was like in my late teens, early 20s, I was very abusive, I'm volatile. And I thought that's how we move, right? Cause you know, you from Brownsville, I'm from East New York, we getting it in. I'm like, oh, you wanna get real with your mouth? I'm gonna get real with my mouth. Then my next relationship after that, I remember me and my ex-wife, we got into it. And I don't say this proudly, but I you know, I slapped him. And that was 24-year-old Maria. So, and his reaction to not fight me back, to walk away from me, was a very brand new experience. And it was there that the light went off. Maria, something about what you've been operating is not normal. Right? Because sometimes when you grow up and all you see, you and your cousins, we talk about if that, I'm slapping you in the face, if I'm cutting. Let me tell you, I have a gift of words. So I can use my words to uplift and I can use my words to cut. And I use my words that night to cut him and I use my hands. And it was in that space that he was the mirror. And sometimes relationships, you get into a relationship so God can show you you're ugly. And he was like, yo, I don't know how you used to deal in things, but that's unacceptable. And I was like, what? Unacceptable? we don't fight? We don't say mean and nasty things? So that's when the work started. And that was 12 years ago. I became very conscious. I was just like, certain things were coming up and had nothing to do with him that I didn't like about myself. I'm like, damn, why do you have to be so ugly and nasty? And that's when that healing began. And, you know, started going get some counseling. And, you know, my counselor at the time, she was like, Maria, you got an anger problem. I'm like, me? I had an anger problem. What you mean? Like, I don't think I have an anger problem. You know, she was right. And anger is a secondary emotion, often rooted in pain. So I had to do the work of what am I hurting about? And it was like, oh, I'm angry because you said something to hurt me. You said something that spoke to my inner saboteur, and now you have resurrected her or you ignited her. And out of my own hurt, I want to hurt you back. So that's when I really started that journey of really seeing other people as God's children. And like, Lord, I know how you play. You don't play about me being disrespected. So why would I go and do that to other people? Now the thought of even saying some of the things I would say back in them days, it disgusts me. I'm like, who did I think I was? Now I don't even have the capacity in relationships, personal or professional, for any tearing down, any negativity. I established those boundaries with the men I date. I'm like, let me tell you what we're not gonna do. What we're not gonna do, we're not gonna curse at each other. We're not gonna put our hands on each other. We're going to agree, disagree. We're going to learn how to disagree in a healthy manner, right? And of course, none of us are perfect. You know, that's not saying that you don't get angry and there's no room for anger and there's no room for being upset, because we're all human and we have those emotions. But you have to know yourself enough to say, all right, what? Why is this triggering for me? Where is this taking me? I'm not going to go there. Let me step back from a situation and let me do the work on me. And then I'm going to come back to this conversation in 15 to 20 minutes, right? But I'm not in that space now. But that's really when I learned. Somebody else had to come along and teach me that that's not healthy and that's not how you do it. And, you know, I went and I did the work.
Thank you. Yeah, anger is not a good feeling. I wish we could make anger, it is a part of the human experience, but I wish anger was like a third or fourth resource we use. Like, so I want to transition, and this, I think this will be the last question I have for you all. Thank you all for spending this hour with me. But what does a world look like where we choose light? We choose love. We choose to gift ourselves with things instead of harm ourselves. We choose to forgive ourselves instead of being angry at ourselves. We choose to smile at who we see in the mirror instead of tear that person down and add on to that anguish with what comes with living in this world, in this country, at this time and space. What does that world look like? What do you imagine that world to be? And if you want to take a moment, that's totally fine. Whoever's ready to.
I think I can speak to this. Mm-hmm. I think with the world being in alignment with, you know, love and knowing that love is energy, I think the world looks like heaven on earth. I continuously say that heaven is a mindset, and that our goodness and our desire to spread heaven beyond our own selfishness, beyond ourselves, beyond our family, beyond our friends. It means that we're building community. We're building, you know, loving space with the resources that we have, and making sure that we are still in alignment with the earth, and that we are in alignment with all of the elements, including spirit. And by doing so, we save ourselves from our own kind of like suffering, but then we also. Did I get muted? Uh-oh.
Now you're back.
Okay, but yeah. I think it looks like heaven on earth.
Mel, what does that world look like?
For me, I feel like that world would look like it would look like a lot of things, but I feel like what I'm seeing right now is like just men and women treating each other better. I get really disheartened and I get really like sad when I see the way that specifically like Black women get treated by men everywhere of all races. And I feel like that, you know, people leading with love to me looks more like Black women being prioritized, women in general being prioritized, but like Black women specifically being prioritized, being taken care of, being respected, being being watered. That's what that looks like to me. And because I feel like in my experience, like when Black women are good, everybody's good. And so that's what it has to start with for me.
I second that.
I would just like to add, this cancel culture would be gone. I think that it makes me really frustrated to see how quick we're to cancel people. Like, who do we think we are? I think it's very prideful. I think it's very, I don't know, like, it's highly critical of people. I think that we need to extend a little bit more compassion and grace to other people, like, and let people have a bad day and know when to mind your business. Like, certain things have nothing to do, but because we live in this world that we have social media, which can be an amazing gift, and it can come with also its burdens and curses, that I see how we talk about one another and cancel people. Like, who made you God? Like, how dare you sit on God's throne and try to cancel someone? Like, do you understand? Like that really burns it irks my spirit. It, you know, burns my soul. So I think in that space of having love and light, we would just have a little bit more grace and compassion. And this does not mean that I'm not saying that we don't hold people accountable when needed, and we don't hold people to a certain standard. But what I'm saying, we can be a little more graceful to it, because what I'm noticing is that it's sending off these messages of fear, where people feel like they can't be authentically themselves. People feel like they always have to censor themselves, because we live in a highly, everybody's offended, everybody's in their feelings society. And I'm just like, when did we get like this? So I think that just in that space, I would love to see us, you know, really get over this whole cancel culture situation, have more grace, have more compassion with people, because especially people in public arenas. And like I said, this is not saying that we don't hold people accountable, but I'm like, what if, you know, cameras were following you 24/7? What would the world know about you, you know? And just having some sort of grace and compassion for other people, and treat people the way you want to be treated. They taught us this in kindergarten. Like, treat other people the way you want to be treated. But that's hard to do if you don't treat yourself with love and kindness. So you treat other people the way you internally treat yourself. But that's what I would like to see. Just cancel the cancel culture. Have grace and compassion and love and light for other people, and know when it's time to, you know, speak up and set boundaries and, you know, hold people accountable. But even in doing that, doing it with a level of grace.
Mm-hmm. Snaps fingers. Thank you. Anthony, I wanna have you answer the question, end with you. And since you're a proponent of words of affirmation, could you leave us with some words of affirmation that we could take into this week moving forward? But what is that? What is the first thing? What does that world look like for you when people choose light, love, self-forgiveness?
Right. I knew you was going to find some way to put me on the spot. Yeah. I ain't got nothing for y'all. But look, I just think it's gratitude, you know? For me, it's just that world, a world full of gratitude and love and cooperation, you know, to me, I think that's what it looks like, you know, and nothing but good can be manifested from a world filled with that. So that's what I would say that world looks like. And as far as affirmations, I mean, just, I think we talked about it, you know, just being love. Just, you know, I think if you woke up every morning and just simply said, you know, I am loved, you know, I think something as simple as that even if you repeated it 5 times, can probably start your day in a really powerful way, you know, and starting your day with gratitude in general. You know, I don't know specifically what each person is grateful for, but starting the morning with gratitude changes the way you speak about the day, change the way you view the day. That you might have saved yourself an argument that you would have gotten into later that day had you, you know, not just took time to just think about the things you were grateful for. So, you know, make a list, you know, of all the things that you are grateful, whether that's big or small, and just see how it changes your day. So that's it.
Thank you, man. And I want to thank all of y'all for spending your Sunday with me. That hour went by kind of fast, but I do appreciate it. I think this is a conversation that is had. I think it needs to be more, dare I say, commercialized. I think there needs to be a everlasting fad or phase where self-love, self-forgiveness is the topic, and then everything else is a root from that. So we'll be back next Sunday, different topic, different guests. I do want to thank you all. I hope you all have a good week. I love you all. Bless up.
Thank you so much. Have a beautiful
day. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Y'all.